Welcome, 6:30 PM, Wednesday, November 10th. We're gonna call the Public Safety Committee to order. And welcome everybody to the meeting. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Chief Morris, for setting it up for us. Changes to the agenda tonight?
Nope.
Okay. Approval of our minutes.
I make a motion we approve the minutes.
Second it.
Thank you. Very good. Okay, public comment for items not listed on the agenda.
We have two people online and it's open for them.
Thank you for doing that.
All participants are unmuted.
Give it a couple seconds here, see if somebody's trying to chime in. Thank you for tuning in, the people who are online. I appreciate you guys listening in. So we're going to move on then to item number five, citizen noise complaint. What would you like us to consider on this one, Chief?
Well, Mr. Purcell, I left him a message today. He had contacted us here a while back and is concerned with the noise that's being raised at or created by the beer station at the beer station from their music. It's a business zone. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a noise permit. I think that's up to the council to decide whether that's maybe we may want to run it past legal. Mr. Purcell wanted to have a voice, and so I suggested that he come to this meeting.
Thank you.
I left him a message at 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock today, confirming the location, and he's not here. It did go to voicemail, so I don't know if he didn't get it or.
Sure.
So I don't know if we want to table it and.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you bringing it here for the discussion, and it'd be nice if Mr. Purcell was here. But since he's not, what do we do? Is there something we'd like to discuss about it?
Oh, I have a couple questions on that, please.
Sure.
Okay. First off, what time does the music have to be off?
Well, for a business district, I don't think that there is any. There's an ordinance that talks about somebody like having a, like if you had a shop in your garage and you're working on cars, you've got time limits on that. You've got other ordinances that like pertain to neighborhoods, but as near as we can tell in our interpretation, they don't apply to a business district, and this is certainly zoned as business. Mm-hmm. So I'm maybe with your guys's, if you want us to run it past legal, I can run it past Jason and then see if he wants us to engage Carrie and have her evaluate whether this does or does not apply to a business district.
Plus, my second part of that is, do we have the opportunity to get our hands on a decibel to get the noises coming out of there in the evening to see if it breaks a certain decibel, which you're right, it probably should go back to Jason and to council, but maybe set a decibel that.
I mean, they have some apps on phones, obviously. I'm not going to rely a heck of a lot on that, but I can research that and, you know, just drive by out there a couple times at different times. Nowhere in the code does it set a decibel, to my knowledge. Nowhere in our code does it address any certain decibel level.
But I think that's something that needs to be looked at so we can get that into the code, the noise decibel, where it's not, you know, because I can understand people's concerns when you're trying to sleep and everything else and you've got this going on.
They consistently, I spoke with Eric, and consistently from my experience and what Eric has seen, is they're shutting their stuff off at about 10 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty consistently.
Yeah.
But we'll certainly look into a meter.
But it'd also be really interesting to know which day, if it's every day of the week or just Friday and Saturday nights. And also, like you say, the hours that they're concerned about. And I think I agree with Councilor Washburn. I think it would be good, and the chief, that maybe to go through Jason, because maybe he and Gary can find it or know it before, and we won't have to go to legal. But it would be nice if they could do some and check into it. But that's the only complaint we've had, is just this one gentleman.
There have been a couple of people that have made passing comments that the music is loud, and that's, you know, from people that are in that general area. But with it being zoned as business, I'm not sure that it's something that we can actually address.
Right.
And that's not something that I feel...
I just had a question. Doesn't Mr. Purcell live across the highway and over a couple blocks?
You know, honestly, I don't know, Sandy.
Yeah, he lives... I want to say it's closer to Bugsy's on that side of the street, so I don't know why it would be so long. But if it's the same Gary Purcell? You don't know that?
It's on the thing. Mr. Purcell. I think it's Gary. I think it is Gary Purcell.
Mm-hmm.
I just have Mr. Purcell on here. I think it's Gary Purcell. I'll reach back out to him and follow up tomorrow. To make the next meeting or maybe provide some more information. He says he seems to be very exasperated, and he just says it's too loud. And
yeah, there's a kind of it's an interesting question to bring up, because there's a certain you know, like you're saying, in a business district, it's nice to be able to be open and have people come by, and I know they do karaoke, and so it certainly seems like something that, on one side of the fence, it's a good thing. People are enjoying being able to gather and going out and having some food and listening to music. So I think it'd be an interesting discussion to have. I don't necessarily want to automatically shut down a good thing, but on the other hand, might be nice to understand some more, like what are the rules and what's Mr. Purcell's specific complaint. I'm sure there's probably other people. If one person speaks up, generally there's some other people that feel the same way, but obviously there's a lot of people that also feel like it's a nice thing to be able to go do karaoke, you know. So it'd be interesting to, I'm not opposed to having the discussion at all. I think it'd be interesting to learn more about that. So
I will look into the meter, I will look into running it by legal, and I will contact Mr. Purcell and see if he wants to come back to the next meeting. If that sounds agreeable.
Yeah.
Fine with me.
Sounds good. Thank you.
But if it's who I'm thinking of, he may have gone to Arizona for the winter.
I just talked to him last week.
Okay.
Or
okay.
2 weeks ago.
Okay.
I don't remember what day I talked to him, but I just talked to him, and he planned on being here.
Okay.
And he knew where the meetings were at, so he's obviously familiar with the city.
Interesting. Well, that's good. Interesting topic. Thank you. Should we move on to departmental update? Is that one okay?
That's good. We've been, we continue to be inordinately busy. Like I mentioned last night, the incident at University of Oregon, I was brief on that just because it was a long meeting and we got on, but our dispatcher's intervention in that and teamwork and partnering with them, and then subsequently a couple of our officers assisting them, led to this thing ending without any kind of bloodshed and stuff, Lord knows what, from happening there. So that was a big win for us and for U of O police and for Eugene in general. This guy was set to harm a lot of people, and we were able to stop it.
Yeah, and you don't normally hear that coming out of dispatch. We don't normally hear stories about dispatch, but that's so great that...
You know, dispatchers are our lifeline.
Mm-hmm.
Without them, we're in deep trouble, and they do a lot of really good things. This one just kind of came to the forefront because it was so extraordinary. We have access to the U of O cameras, so she could get on there and look at the same time. And their security operations center could do that. And their people, the people in the security operations center are security guards. They're not police officers. There's actually with a contract company.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were able to communicate directly with us, and we were able to get stuff moving and coordinated, and it had a really, really good outcome.
Did I understand it last night at the meeting? Did I understand somebody was going from building to building on the U of O campus pulling the alarms?
He was in the law building, and the police officer was in the building alone resetting alarms for, I believe, about 30 minutes with this guy that was in there that was heavily armed. That police officer is incredibly fortunate. Because the police officer was down on, I think the first floor is where the control panel is, the reset panel, and he was in there screwing with all these alarms, trying to reset them, and at the same time, this guy's going from station to station, maybe trying to see what kind of a response he was get. He may have been trying to time how long it took people to get there, I'm not sure. I haven't talked to the person at all, but sure. You know, he had a plan. And we were very, very fortunate. We had a young girl that's 14 that we here locally prevented from committing suicide about a week ago. We got to the house and she had a belt around her neck and had been cutting her arms up. And this is somebody who we have dealt with a number of times in the past. And so we were able to stop that and save her. And we've had some pretty significant incidents, and everything has come out, knock on wood, very well.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I did get word from ODOT, and the cameras are flat, unquestionably a no-go.
Oh.
They said that we don't have enough documented traffic crashes at those intersections to warrant their granting of permission to install red light cameras. I'm gonna talk to Senator Manning and see if there's any way around that, any way to circumvent that ODOT decision, but based on their criteria and their guidelines, I think we're probably dead in the water, that they won't allow the cameras because we just don't have enough crashes at those intersections, which to me, I would rather it be preventative. One of the arguments that they say is that sometimes by installing the cameras, you increase the crashes, you increase rear end, you stop high speed angle crashes from people, you know, blowing a light and getting nailed T-bone, but you create an increase in rear end collisions because people know the cameras are there and they put the binders on, they don't want to get snagged by the camera, and the driver behind isn't paying attention and rear ends them. And so they go through a whole bunch of different matrices to actually figure out what works and what period of time, and the stats aren't there to support it. So that's very disappointing because I think that would have been a very effective tool to help us.
Interesting. Yeah, does everybody, I'm sure you guys remember, this was a question we brought up a few months ago. Regarding, was it 10th or 18th and 10th? And
first,
okay. Well, that's interesting. That's too bad, but I appreciate it.
And again, I'm not letting it drop. I'm going to see if there isn't some kind of a procedure where, you know, maybe with legislative support that we can work around that. If there's some kind of a policy, maybe working with the director of ODOT. I don't know, but I'm gonna see what we can do.
And one end, it's nice that we don't have that many accidents. So let's clarify something for a minute. I like everybody that comes to these meetings. Councillor Thomas is no exception. My understanding from what I heard last night at the meeting is that if Councillor Wells is here, and we allow Councillor Thomas to start discussing things with us, that we've in effect created a city council meeting. Am I understanding what I heard last night correctly?
That is my understanding as well, but I'm certainly not the expert on this.
If we have four councillors and one of them is the council president, then we create a quorum of the city council, which I'm determined to never do in one of my committee meetings, because I don't want to accidentally create a city council meeting, right? Did you understand it differently?
But we had discussed that at a prior council meeting, and I think it was said if there is a councillor in the audience, they can say they're speaking as a citizen and not as a councillor, and then they wouldn't count. And that was, we did get that advice from legal. Because I think it's when we're going through the rules, we discussed that in length.
Hmm. Any comments, Councillor Washburn, on that?
That's the way I understand it too. If they say they're speaking as a private citizen, not as a councillor, then it's okay to do.
One of the things that was a mandatory change to the agenda was the statement of potential quorum of the council.
Right, which I still don't understand, because what makes it a quorum?
And again, I am not in any way qualified to even provide any kind of advice on that.
The other thing that comes up all the time is deliberation, right? So even if I'm speaking as a private citizen, if I'm deliberating with other council members on a topic that's on an agenda, even if I say I'm a private citizen, aren't I still deliberating a topic with other council members and then in fact not acting as a private citizen? It's a complicated thing for me, and I don't understand it well enough. I just keep getting confused by the different rules. I don't like to give the appearance that we are breaking the rule, even if we're not. And so with all due respect, Councillor Thomas, I'm not going to call on you.
I'll just tell him after it's over, because as a citizen, I happened to be at the ODOT meeting the other night when...
Yeah, and that's fine. I absolutely encourage you to do that, and you can certainly... So I'd be happy to get further clarification on that, because the deliberation thing really confuses me, because I feel like if I talk to Councillor Wells outside of a meeting, we could be talking about anything, but it gives the appearance that I'm talking about council stuff, even if we're not. I'd rather just have it all on the record and just talk about stuff. That's no hard feelings, but that's why I avoid you guys like the plague anytime we walk out the door. I'm not interested in having chats that look like we're deliberating. I hope that makes sense. I'm not saying I'm interpreting it right, but one time Councillor Conley said to us, you have to avoid the appearance. And I get the feeling that anytime I'm talking to another council member, I'm giving the appearance that we're talking about city business, even if we're not. And that's just my opinion. I'm not saying anybody else needs to honor that or do it the same way. But so, okay.
I think another thing on the issue
is
we really don't make any decisions here. We forward it to council for the decisionary process. We may discuss, but I mean, we may make a recommendation, but the council is the one that makes the vote, and the council is the one that makes the decision.
Yeah, and I feel comfortable letting the council do that. I do too. Having the committees make decisions, but... Councillor Washburn, anything on this?
I agree with Councillor Wells. We forward it back to the council itself to be voted on as a majority. It's our recommendation to either bring it back or not bring it back, and that's the way I understood it last night, too.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be good for us to bring it up. We could question our legal counsel at our next city council meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Just ask for clarification.
Yeah, and
because you brought it up, and I'm sure there's seven of us that sit up here, including the mayor, and I'm sure there's more than one that's got that same concern that you do.
Yeah, I liked that addition to the council rules last night. That helped me understand at least that part of the rule, but then I still get confused about the deliberation part. Like, Because, I mean, Counselor Leach comes to the meetings. I think it's great that she does, but I always hesitate to involve her for the same reason. And then some committees, obviously, Counselor Wells, you're not on, so then that would change what constitutes a quorum. Anyways, I guess that we'll continue with that discussion at a later date. But let's move on to number 7 for now. Chief Morris, thank you, sir, for bringing this back to us now that we're all gathered together again.
And this was at your request based on the minutes from the last meeting.
Exactly. You want me to lead the discussion?
Sure.
Okay. So, a couple meetings ago, we all, this committee agreed to put this item on the agenda, right? Because Counselor Washburn had made a request of the police department. And Counselor Wells supported putting that item on the agenda. So now is it made it to the agenda, and here we are to discuss. So first off, I'd like to understand what it is exactly that Counselor Washburn is requesting from the police department, so that as a committee we can decide if that's something that as a committee we're interested in receiving and then discussing as a committee. So Counselor Washburn.
I requested CAD reports from the chief and finding out doing it by myself, it would cost me money. But talking to Jason, the way he explained it to me is if we do it as at least two members of the council, of the committee, we do not have to pay a fee for that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my understanding totally from him, because I wanted to see what the CAD reports were, just to see what our busy times are, what's going on, and how things are proceeding here. That is my understanding. If nobody else wants this, I will say I'll put it to bed and it's to rest. But it just takes two people to say yes, I would like to see those, and it has to proceed forward.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I recall you mentioning that discussion with Administrator Canope at our previous meeting, which and then kind of forecasting this discussion tonight, I probed a little deeper last night to Administrator Canope to understand if, as a committee, we could in fact direct staff time, use resource of time as opposed to resource of money. And he clarified that we could do the resource of time, but we did not have the ability as a committee to do the resource of money. Did everybody understand that the same way? What Administrator Canope said last night?
He was talking about, I think more he was talking about calling and asking questions instead of being in a committee doing it.
Right.
My understanding is, like, if I say I wanted to call Superintendent Tracer and ask him a whole bunch of questions, not to do that, come to him and ask those questions and get an answer from him. If he can't, then he will go to the proper source and get the answer.
Sure. So, and I understood that the same way, Councilor Washburn. So in this regard, it seemed to me from the discussion that last night that our committee could in fact ask the police department to spend time on a project. So my question, I think, then for the committee is this a project that as a committee we're interested in putting on our agenda and getting the report back about the CAD and on and on and on? Because in essence we're saying is Councilor Washburn's request something that we want to put on our agenda forecaster, receive the report from staff, discuss with staff, go through it, rather than Councilor Washburn just having a individual question, which obviously individual questions could be elevated to a committee question.
Right.
So I'm not saying, I mean, all questions start with an individual and then different groups. So, because it sounds like we have the ability to do that, we just have to do it as a committee. And so I'm not familiar with what a CAD report even is or why I would want to look at one. So can we discuss that a little bit?
Because that was going to be a question I had. What data would we get from that? And, And is it?
Okay, a CAD, a CAD, computer aided dispatch.
Okay.
So whenever you call in, when anybody calls in and says, I want to report a barking dog, or whatever.
Whatever.
We create a database record. The time the call came in, it gets assigned one of two different numbers, whether it's a case number or just a log number. The system automatically generates that number. And we have all the complainant information in it, we have the victim information, we have what's called CJIS, Criminal Justice Information System information in the CAD report, such as the registrar, like a license plate ABC123, the registered owner. It, in some cases, will, in a lot of cases, will have warrant information, his height, weight, hair, eye, social security number. If it's, again, this is anything from a barking dog to a murder. Okay. It's got everybody's name in there. It's got personal information. It's got stuff attached to the CAD, like when we process DUI, a drunk driver. There's a bunch of forms that go with that. That gets put into the CAD. There is a bunch of stuff that's in there. Much of it is, we can't release stuff on active investigations. We can't release that. And there is a bunch of information contained in the CAD report that requires redaction prior to release. You don't want the name of a 14-year-old rape victim being released. So what we would have to do for the CADs is to go through every single one of them and take time to redact that information out of there to block it so that it's not visible to anybody that's viewing it. I would hazard a guess, and again, I can't remember what the date parameter was, but I gave you an estimate. We looked at the volume of CADs that we had in there, and it was 15, 16, 1800 pages long.
Right. What I'm just saying is just for a month. I would just like to see it for a month, you know, just to see.
And I understand
everything has to be blacked out, just like they do in the service and everything
else. Right, and there is nothing that we don't want to release. There's nothing here that's from a transparency standpoint that we don't want to release. There's stuff that we legally can't release. If it's an active investigation, we won't release anything.
Correct.
The only issue at hand is the amount of time it takes to go through and redact 1,800 pages of information.
But when I asked for that, I was asking for a couple of months.
And that was like 1,900
pages? Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
Drop it down just to a month time to
right.
see.
Right, and Councilor Washburn, we will do whatever you want.
Well, no, it's what and, we want to do as
well,
a committee.
Well, I'm talking this in global terms here. It just, again, because what you had asked for, again, was just a huge, when we just did a count, when we ran a count just of how many records we would have to go through, it was some astronomically high number of pages. And if you're looking for something specific, then we can narrow that down really easy and take 1,800 pages and turn it into 10.
That's what I was just going to ask. Are there other filters in there that...
If you're looking for something specific...
But I'm not looking for any specific.
I just want
for a month.
Okay.
Which, when I asked for it initially, I was asking for a couple of months.
Right.
And I understand that, that's just, but it's up to the committee what the rest of the committee want.
And, you know, and I'm wondering if you were able to better refine what it is that you were looking for. You're not, I can almost guarantee you, you're not interested in looking at the intoxilizer checklist when we're doing a DUII arrest.
I just want to see the number of calls that were going on, because...
Okay, but that was...
But, because that will lead into my other comments at the end, and I'll save those for later.
Okay.
So this is a good discussion. We've opened up, we've heard some more information about the requests. And I mean, this is exactly why we wanted to get it on the agenda, and so we could hammer this out, because the email that I think we all received that was part of this discussion, I don't recall the details of it. I just remember that it talked about some of these same things. The time that it would take to, who would be assigned to go through and redact the information?
We would grab someone probably initially in dispatch, and then Deputy Chief Markell would go through, because he is the records custodian, and it's on his head if we miss something. And it's so easy to miss something, we have to have a second person do it.
Yeah.
We have to have a second person review it. So realistically...
Review the redaction. The redactions that are...
I'm not sure what I just said, but yes, they have to review to make sure it's completely redacted, but okay. We didn't miss a date of birth. We didn't miss,
a social security number.
Social security number, CJIS information, that type of stuff. So, I mean, it becomes very, very, very time-consuming to do that.
Mm-hmm. So...
If you're just looking for the run report, where we can go through and just list... you know, one CAD after another, after another, after another, that gives the time, like it would give the CAD number, it would give the time of call, it would give the type of call, and it would give, we could probably get the officer, the primary officer that was assigned, we could do that. I don't know that we could get secondary because of the way the CAD says, so we may give you one officer, but there were 10 on scene. The way that our CAD system is designed, it has a primary officer, and I don't know in that kind of, but we could do that, and that would comprise,
that would comprise
10 or 15 pages, and would require little, if any, redaction.
Right, because my thing is the number of officers on scene, you have one primary, like you said, and they are in charge of that scene, they are the ones that are going to write the report, usually, unless something comes up in the other part of it, but that's what I want to know, because, yeah, okay, that's what I would like to know, and it's up to the committee.
If you can help give me some more what you're looking for, it will help me give you exactly what you want.
Well, that would tell me the number of calls and things that we're dealing with. You know, like last night, we've got, from Chief Nichols, we've got, you know, the number of calls that we're averaging a day, and the number of calls were up this year and everything. And it's, like I said, it's up to the rest of the committee, just not me, but if they say no, then I'll accept that answer. I don't have a problem with that.
And we can easily get calls per month. I can do comparisons from November, however many years back. November 17 was this call, November 18 was this call. At the end of the year, we typically do like a summary. We show what our call volume is. They typically do that for budget. You know, there's a lot of different things we can do with the numbers, and a lot of different reports that we can run. It's just, we're happy to comply, but it's just, it becomes really time and labor intensive. If you're wanting the entire CAD report for every single call that we've had for a 2 month period.
No, I'm just saying just, you know, the volume and what some of those calls are, which I understand there's a lot of things that NASA, you know, total investigations going on there, you know, nobody needs to know that. I don't want to know that. Like I said.
Yeah. So let's try to kind of, as a committee, since we're discussing this, and it's like I said, it's a good discussion. It started with an interesting question. I didn't really understand it. I feel like I'm understanding it better now, what's involved. Are we, like, can we as a committee hone in on some things, and then we could give Chief Morris a consensus one way or another? So one thing I keep hearing is that we're interested in the number of calls. Am I understanding that correctly?
Correct.
In an average month, or like Chief Nichols said last night, he gave us a summary, and kind of an annual summary.
I can give you an exact number of calls for every month.
Yeah.
That's easy.
Let's start with that. So is the committee interested in receiving that information? And I'm not ending the discussion, I'm saying, let's start doing a checklist and decide as a committee what information we want as a committee, right? So what's their consensus on the call volume, that question?
The call volume and what it, yeah, and what it is, what exactly, you know, whether it was a traffic.
Like barking dog, assist outside agency, murder, whatever.
Okay, so is that what we're asking for, call volume and nature of the call?
I'd be very happy with that.
Okay.
Like I said, it's not just up to me, it's.
Well, right.
But I think if we're gonna get a report, we should have some information, and I think, I don't think this is too much, but I think it's enough.
It sounds like we're getting down into a report that, the redaction seems like it's the big kind of issue, because it takes up a lot of some officers' time.
And we're gonna eliminate, I think.
If we can eliminate that, then I think we're.
We can, this is like that.
Okay, so we're talking about call volume, and we're talking about the nature of the call. Okay, is there something else that we're trying to get on this report? So it sounds like the committee agrees on those two things. Let's talk about a third thing.
I think that's what I'm looking for. I don't know what.
Well, I think it helped to find out what the report was, what it was, and what we could do with it, and what we can get. And I think that's provided a lot of information. But I also don't want to tie up two people down there for information that really maybe it's not what we wanted to see.
We can, and again, I'm not the one that's intimately familiar with doing this.
Right.
So I'm going to give you an estimate. I think we can produce what you're asking for right here. I think we can produce that in a publishable format in probably 20 minutes.
And this could also be, how will I say this? If you, going forward, if somebody asks us, well, gee, how busy is our police department? You would have to say, well, this month,
yep,
we did. I mean, you could use it for your own good, too.
And we do when we have people that call up and ask, we do this.
Right.
We just run a real quick report. And I think we could produce this, I'm going to guess, within 20 minutes, maybe even less.
And basically, the machine does it, right?
Yep.
So if we
tell the parameters, and we may have to do a little bit of customizing, because I don't know exactly what it displays. But once we get that in there, it's something that we can spit out real easy. That is just a piece of cake.
Well, it sounds like the committee right now is that's what we are interested in. We got consensus on that. So what month are we talking about? Or what are we asking this to be? Every month we want to hear a report? Where are we going with this right now? And I know that can evolve over time. I'm not trying to limit it. I'm just saying,
right,
for tonight, what are
I
we?
I would like to see for. Do we have a meeting again this month?
Next meeting is, it looks like, the end of December.
December, so let's just do for December, because that would be towards the end of the month. It would give the chief time to go through it and do it. And then we can come back and discuss it if we want to do it quarterly or whatever.
Okay.
But I think it's a good tool, if we're on this committee, to see what's going on and understand what's going on in a better format.
What do you think of that?
I think that's great.
Okay.
And again, that's right, you know, we were, in the council meetings, we at the end of the comments, we were spending a lot of time, you know, talking about, you know, kind of recapping incidents that had happened to the month. Now, this is something entirely different, so I'm not,
right.
I think this is a great idea. I know this is great. But we were, you know, recapping, you know, some significant incidents, and it was taking too much time at the end of the meeting, so we stopped doing that.
Mm-hmm. So What if we, just where our meeting is typically at the end of the month, that's when it's scheduled right now, what if we ran it, would anybody care if we ran it?
How about meeting to meeting?
Or like a week before meeting to meeting, so we always had time for you to review it a little bit. I mean, and
okay.
So like what if we did this first one from November 21st to December 21st, and then a week later he has... But he's also had time to review it instead of trying to print it out that day. I don't know if that matters. I don't really care.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it right up because the packets have to go out before the meeting, so I would do it, you know, from whenever the
maybe 15th. Okay? That way you can review it, and if you have questions, you could ask.
Yeah.
So we're basically asking for a 30-day time period around the time that the packet comes out.
Yep, and that's very reasonable. That's stats, and that's what we live by.
Right.
Absolutely.
Good. That would be interesting. I think that would be... it's interesting, last night, pardon me a little soliloquy here, but Brandon, I'm not sure what his exact title is. Fire chief? Is he a chief too?
He's a chief, yeah.
Chief, yeah. But he presented this information, but the result of presenting the information is he actually garnered some support for something that he wanted us to be thinking about down the road. And so I think, like you said, or somebody said, this information may in fact help us understand the constraints that our police department is
exactly,
currently under.
Exactly. Yeah. We've got numbers to prove it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a good start, and I think that was a good discussion, and I hope it moves us along in our direction we want to go. So thank you for explaining that to us, and thanks for bringing the question up. So our next meeting's December 30th right now. That's what the schedule's calling for. So let's take a look at anything coming up on our forecaster. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I skip something?
No.
Is it forecasters next and then comments if anybody has them? Okay, go ahead.
We're still looking at the abandoned vehicle and what options are. We're looking at what other cities are doing. And then we're going to bring Mr. Purcell back and put his issue back on there. And in the meantime, try and get a little bit more direction and try and find a decibel meter. We can drive around tonight and just figure out and then I can come back to the meeting and say, on this date it was this reading, on this date it was this reading, on this date, and that way we've got some consistent data.
Oh, yeah.
I have one question on the abandoned vehicle. Is that, would that have to come, not, I know it would have to come back to council for approval, but would that also include some of these travel trailers that we have that people are living in that are falling apart and causing a nuisance?
It will address that, but as Carrie Connolly last night referenced, she said, I'm sure the chief knows what, you know, when we start kicking people out of camps, the ORSs that Governor Brown has put into place severely limits, and if somebody is living in a trailer or living in a vehicle, we are very limited as to what we can do. And the ORS actually provides a remedy for said person that if we kick them out of a public area, i.e. a parking lot, that the ORS specifically gives them the right to come back and sue the city. And I'm not our counsel, I'm not an attorney, I can't talk to that. There's so many things, and this will be challenged in court, it'll go to the Court of Appeals. I'm not qualified to even go down that road, and nor am I even prepared to start having that discussion tonight. But where we're going is, yes, that's what we want to address, but the landscape of this is changing daily, and I can't remember when the time certain is that this ORS goes into effect. It's in effect now, but there was either a 100 or a 360 day grace period before the remedy for the homeless person could seek remedy in the form of a lawsuit for kicking them out of a public area.
But I guess that brings up another part that I would like to ask is, would this also include, because I'm seeing more and more of it, and some situations it's very dangerous if people are parking their trailers on a curve when you're trying to come around.
And if it's not zoned, if it's not zoned against it, if a homeowner could, for the permissible time, park their trailer there to unload it, we can't do anything about it.
Do we have Yeah, but do we have an ordinance on that? So where we may have to put something in there that you have, say, 24 hours?
And that's something that we would address. There was one, and I can't remember the exact location, but it was just this morning. Somebody called because there were large trucks trying to get in to someplace, and they were coming within inches of a trailer. But the problem is the trailer was, for all intents and purposes, legally parked, albeit for too long of a period, but we have marked it, and our hands are tied, and we're going to get sued if we tow it.
What I'm talking about is travel trailers that somebody is parked in front of their house and say they're going to go camping.
And unless we have designated through ordinance.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think that's something we need to look at in the, you know,
but
in the future here.
And I don't disagree with that, but you think of, and I don't know how many miles of streets we have.
Right.
But it's going to require going through and painting certain curbs that a large vehicle, and then you have to define what a large vehicle is. This is in scope, this is huge.
What I'm getting at, and I think we're losing it here, what I'm getting at is a time frame that they can actually park it in front of their house to load or unload instead of being there a week or
whatever. Okay, you're saying just to stay, not a zone, but giving them a time frame.
Time frame.
And that...
Because...
Right.
Well, I'll say it. Alan Timothy, right there on the corner, I mean, there's a gentleman that parks his there, and if somebody's coming the other way, you've got to stop or you're going to run into each other.
Hmm. Okay, so I will add that to the agenda forecast.
Thank you.
I was misunderstanding what you were... Yeah. I thought you were saying just period, they couldn't park there.
No, but I'm saying, you know, because you got to put your groceries in and all this, but, you know... And with the weather changing and everything and dark and everything, you can't see those.
Right.
You know? That's what I'm getting at.
And another issue is like people that have these long trailers and they have work stuff in. And they have their vehicle, their truck is parked, and then they pull up along, you know, it's right alongside their house. Well, it may sit there. For, you know, it also blocks intersections.
Correct.
Rough. Okay, good. So that, thank you for adding that to the forecaster. That sounds like an interesting topic. Any other comments on the agenda forecaster right now, gentlemen? Okay. We're going to go to committee member comments. I'm going to go alphabetically today. Oh, in reverse alphabetical. We'll start with Councillor Wells.
I just wanted to give you a little more information about what was presented to the Community Development Committee. It was brought up last night about Jenna speaking from the state. And I just want to say she was also looking at what possible improvements or what a survey could give us on what could be done with 99 through town. Mm. And because they have proof of what they've done in other cities throughout the state. And there's some stuff that could never happen here. But it's not saying that any of this is going to happen, but we could look into what the possibilities were. And she was very upbeat, very positive. And like Gary said last night, and Andrea, she also would help us get grant money if we had to do a survey or get some experts in here to look at this. So I just wanted, for a public safety part, if we could make that highway safer.
Oh, absolutely.
That would, and now, there might be people who wouldn't be happy with it, but I don't think any of us want to see us have one loss of a life out on that street. And we probably will. So I just wanted to share that with you because I was very impressed, like Andrea said, to have the lady come down here from Corvallis and be here the whole time for our meeting and give a presentation. And she had some things that we could use that could be positive if all the pieces fit together. And we could end up with nothing if the citizens didn't support us. So, I mean, it wasn't, you know, it's not like anything's in concrete. No, nothing's in concrete. Nothing's even started. But it's a starting place.
But the first step is a survey.
Or, yeah, or some type of, yep.
Is it more of is the gist of it more from a safety standpoint or a economic development standpoint or a better traffic flow? Like what's?
Well, it would be like, you know, it's also, would it be possible for bike lanes? I mean, that's a safety issue. Okay.
I'm sorry, what?
A bike lane or a pedestrian lane?
It's a biplane.
No, bike. Yeah, I was looking this way. So, I mean, that was one thing she brought up, because that's one of the areas she oversees. Uh-huh. But, you know, like if you go to Eugene, you see a good example is, and we probably don't have room for, but in Eugene they have those green sections with a bike. And I saw one in Springfield when I was over for a doctor's appointment. Same kind of thing. But the different striping or, you know, there's, and I'm not saying that's what would happen here, but those are things she showed us pictures of.
Right. Interesting. So the first step to kind of go down that path at some point would be a survey to kind of get an idea of what we actually have.
Or get the engineers to come out, yeah, to say, here's what the possibilities are for this section of 99. These are the options.
Interesting. I'm glad that discussion is going. Good for them.
And that's why I wanted to share it with this committee, so the chief was also aware, and the rest of us sitting here, that because it is a safety issue, public safety issue.
Yeah. Interesting. Councilor Washburn.
Well, I have several things here, if you don't mind.
I don't.
One of them is Ivy. I am getting beat up by people in this community every day. When are we going to start enforcing red light runners? I came down here tonight again, and the same thing, people running through the lights. My wife almost got rear-ended because a truck went right through the light. I mean, it's a semi, and the semi hits a car, somebody's going to get killed.
Absolutely.
And it's just, it's out of control.
And we are enforcing. We are enforcing, Sid.
Okay.
There's only so many people, and again, we're going from call to call to call. It's a matter of numbers.
Well, because that brings up, okay, I'm going to put you right down on the spot. How many full-time officers do we have? I don't want part-time or people in training. How many full-time officers do we have right now?
We've got four full-time, and we've got three that are with coaches. So we've got seven. We are down only two officers.
And do we still have any part-time officers?
Yes, we do.
How many of those do we have?
We have two.
And I know this is going to be a tough one for you to answer, but I want to make sure at night that we have two, and I'm not trying to micromanage, that we have two officers on, because the way this world is going, I want to make sure that that they have backup here immediately, because it in Eugene right now, there's a guy pulled a knife on a gentleman in Eugene on Willamette Street. An officer was close by. He defused the situation by pulling the gun on the guy. I want to make sure we keep our officers safe.
And I want the exact same thing. Absolutely, I absolutely want the exact same thing. And one of the things that we are incredibly fortunate is that we have had multiple situations where we were absolutely, completely justified in using deadly force, and we de-escalated the situation and did not have to do that. And that was through the use of multiple people.
Correct.
We have been, again, knock on wood, very, very fortunate, and I'm very proud of our staff for what we're facing on a daily basis. I've got videos, I've shown some to some of you. I don't know what videos you've seen, but some of the altercations that we get in are really, really bad situations. And what we're doing is we're staging. If we don't have a second officer on, we're staging. Last night, county had a pursuit out in Albuquerque, right at 36. The guy is a felon. He bailed out. We got down there with county. We pinned it in. Never did find him. And he bailed out on county. County was, thought he was over 100 miles an hour, and when county had him on radar and flipped around, and he anchored the brakes, bailed out of the car, and was out in the fields on foot. And we, county is regularly relying on us for cover, and because we've got the people on, we're very fortunate. I'm in town the bulk of the time. I am, from the time that I get called out to the time that my wheels are rolling on that car, there are about 6 minutes at the very outside. And Mike Bonner is the same way. So you've got two of us that are here. And that is not an ideal situation for a multitude of reasons. But it is what it is. Once we get our officers trained up, then we have an overlap. So we do have two people on at night.
Okay, thank you.
And that is by design, and that's how it has always been.
Right.
And it's, you know, at which you may not know, at 3 a.m., Oregon State Police shuts off. There is not an Oregon State Trooper on the road in the entire state of Oregon from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. There's not one state trooper on the road. Everyone is hurting for people. Everyone. After a certain point at night with the county, you may have three cars on from Florence to up McKenzie Pass. And that's not good. But it unfortunately is the world and the dynamic and the environment that we're living in. We can't find people that want to be cops. And the people that do want to be cops, sadly, many of them are nowhere even remotely qualified to be there. You don't want them out here.
Are we ever going to start the reserve program back up?
We are actively recruiting reserves, but the requirements for the reserves are identical to that of a regular officer, and you don't want something less.
Right.
Reserves are incredibly cheap. They come in, they volunteer their time. They're incredibly cheap until they're not. Because unlike a volunteer firefighter, that reserve has a gun strapped to their hip, and that reserve has the identical authority to me.
Right.
Under Oregon revised statute, that reserve has the same authority. And it is up to other officers, full-time officers that are on duty, to support that. And you may know, Ken, how many hours does it take to become proficient at something? This is a statistic that's been proven.
It takes years.
It takes 10,000 hours to master something. So if you're going to dribble a basketball and shoot from the free throw line, it takes 10,000 hours.
So that's 5 years.
Of consistent. Okay, you're ahead of me. Okay, because you're a manager, you're ahead of me. You know where I'm going with this, because I have said for years, when I get a cop, it's going to take me 5 years before I can walk away from that cop and feel confident that they are going to make the right decision at the right time. They're not going to get hurt. Nobody else is going to get hurt. Okay, so how many work hours are there in a calendar year? 2040.
That's right.
2080. So if it takes 10,000 hours to master, 5 times 2080 is 10,400 hours. It takes a long time. And so you get the reserve officer that comes out for 5 hours a week, and then they go back and do their sales job for the remainder of their week. How long does it take for that reserve officer to become, truly, realistically proficient?
Right.
And that's the problem, because we don't expect them to be out here full time. We don't want them to be out here full time. They have jobs. They want to contribute to the community. Maybe they're looking for a foot in the door, whatever the case. But we can't have one set of standards for full time officers and lower those standards for a reserve officer, since that reserve officer has the identical statutory and, more importantly, the physical tools.
Right.
To do tons of damage. So reserve officers are invaluable. I love reserve programs. I started as a reserve. We are actively and have been actively recruiting reserves. And just like the regular officers, they're washing out in background. We're finding that they're drug dealers, they were drug dealers, they're burglars, or we're finding that they're psychologically unstable, and the psychologist says this person is not qualified. If I put that person on after they tell me that I'm not qualified, I own that person and everything that they do. It's Mary, don't like that fancy ass.
Keep talking.
So the reserve programs are phenomenal. I'm actively trying. Tyler Marler, when he was in dispatch, was a reserve. Tyler Marler has now moved full-time to patrol, so we lost our reserve. It's just, I mean, McDonald's in Portland, I was telling one of you guys, maybe it was you, McDonald's in Portland here about a month ago, they were looking for a night shift closing person. They were paying something like $21 an hour with a $5,000 sign-on bonus. And they couldn't get somebody to come into McDonald's.
Wow.
At 5 years, if our officer has their advanced certificate, which requires a degree at that point at 5 years, so if they've been around for 5 years, they're topping out with our incentives, $6,800 a month. We're paying 100% medical, 100% dental. We're paying 100% PERS. I still can't get people. We're not paying bad. We're paying, for the patrol officer, we're paying good.
Good. Well, that's good to hear.
I still can't get people to come here.
A lot of that comes to the environment of what we're living in now.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Totally.
Cottage Grove, last time I checked, and I was going to call him today for something else, but Cottage Grove, I think, was down 6 officers, and they had 2 dispatchers, and they can't find people to fill the slots. We are all hurting, and it's today's environment. It's what we're expecting and asking of people. From a global community standpoint, it's the expectations. It's a very rewarding career. I've been able to save many lives. I have done CPR on multiple people here and saved them. I stopped one person from jumping off of a bridge. Again, we had a suicide the other night that we kept this little girl from killing herself. These are really big wins. And it is, you can't match the feeling that you get when you're able to save somebody. And it's not just me, it's every officer here has done this. It doesn't outweigh the pressures put on by society as a whole of being put under the scrutiny of a microscope, every single thing that you do. And in some cases, it's justified. Absolutely, it's justified. We need to be accountable. We need to be transparent. We need to be absolutely accountable. Are we an enforcer or are we a protector? What are we? My philosophy and the philosophy of every single person in this department today, we are protectors. That doesn't mean writing a ticket every single time you stop somebody. It doesn't mean not showing leniency. You've got a homeless person, they shoplifted something from a store. Given the totality of the circumstances, do we give that person a break or do we throw them right back into the system and just create an ongoing cycle? Our philosophy is that we're protectors. Mm-hmm. And I am so amazingly proud of the people that we have here, that everybody has that same philosophy. We're very fortunate. We're really, really very fortunate. There are other agencies that aren't so far distant from us that are having 10 and 15 and 20 lawsuits filed a month, and they are causing and inflicting injuries to people because they're not de-escalating, they're not talking the people down. They're not investing the time and training the officers. There's a whole big mix here that comes in, and it starts absolutely with who you select.
Correct.
Yep.
And as much as I want and need reserves, I can't weaken the criteria that we have because I'm exposing the city to the liability, because the city's gonna own every mistake that person makes.
Good discussion.
Yeah, interesting.
And I don't remember if I've told either one of you, I know I've shown you, have I shown you the, what we call the, what are called tattletale lights that we've installed, that I had installed about 3 years ago at all of the intersections to allow us to enforce red lights? Have I shown those to you?
Yeah.
Did I show those to you?
Yeah, you talked to them about it.
And that's something that ODOT, those have been around for years, and ODOT out of this area, out of this region, had never heard of them. And so I did that when I first came here to allow us to enforce that. And like Brandon said and referred to last night, the increase of calls that we are getting from Country Crossroads is crazy. That entire strip around 18th, whether it be the apartments, whether it be the duplexes on Pear Loop, apartments on Rose, duplexes on Pear Loop, or Country Crossroads, our call volume is just off the scale. From the outside, they look like very, very nice apartments. You get into the stairwells and you realize that the building material may not be the best, but they're clean. Within a month, we were in this one apartment that the woman had absolutely destroyed the wall, the sheetrock she had, and she had basically made a doorway into the apartment adjacent to her. She had gone clear through the wall.
Oh my gosh.
And what? The management wasn't evicting her. And this is just, it's ongoing. And the more that we increase our population, the more we are going to not have time to be doing the Dewey enforcement, to be doing the red light enforcement, because we are dealing with people that are involved in violent domestic violence calls where people are getting beaten up, they're getting stabbed. This year, I think we've had 3 stabbings. We've had a couple rapes, and we have cleared those within at the most 24 hours. We had one rape that occurred in one area of town, and we were able to figure out where this person was in Vancouver. The woman was pregnant. He took his boots with steel-toed boots and kicked her in the stomach, trying to cause her to have a miscarriage. After he raped her, we were able to pick him up in Vancouver with the assistance of Clark County Sheriff's Office. We drove up there and were able to pick this guy up. He is now doing, I believe, 15 years, I believe it's 15 years, in the federal penitentiary, and we got a conviction within months. And had we not have gone up and gotten him, had we not have been on top of this, had we not have had the staff to devote to this, but this little project with this one call took 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 of our staff on one call at one phase or another. And when we have a small department, you've got people that have to work night shifts, so they have to sleep, and we just don't have really the numbers that we need to support. We have a static population of 6,000, 6,500, whatever it is. We have a daily transient traffic, last check, of about 25 to 28,000 on a non-game day. Transient traffic on a game day is closer to 30 to 31,000. So in reality, we are policing a city of, on a non-game day, 6,000 plus 25, that's 31,000. We're policing a city of 31,000 people on a budget of 6. It just doesn't pencil. And yes, the majority of the commuter traffic is driving through, but a lot of that commuter traffic, the other day we took 2 people in the afternoon for driving under the influence of intoxicants before 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We we have, every day we have people driving complaints, excess of 100 miles an hour inbound, northbound on 99 from Mill Iron, northbound on River Road from Beacon. It's the activity level that we have. When I came here, I was really surprised. I was very surprised at the level of activity that we have, and it's not minor stuff. It's significant stuff that has to be addressed, and we have to prioritize what we do based on what's happening. And, you know, we can be en route to something, and all of a sudden I've got a 14-year-old girl that's hanging herself in the closet with a belt. This, as a side note, and I was just, it was right after Halloween, and it was just, I think it was the next day. And as a side note, on Halloween, I thought about this little girl because she came up to me last year, and she said, "I want to thank you for saving my life. I'm on medication. My life has gotten better." She's adopted. My life has gotten better. She came up, I didn't even recognize her. She was in a Halloween costume. And she says, "I want to thank you for saving my life because you made a difference." When I took the belt off of her neck the other night, she says, "Bob, I just can't take this anymore. I hurt too bad. I want my mom to love me." Those are really powerful words if you really look at the impact. So we're diverted, and it took three of us to go to that. And we're having to ignore stuff that we see, I mean, flagrant violations, traffic violations that we see. I have to make a choice. It's not that we're not out writing tickets. It's not that we're not out wanting to do this. It's that, a semi-truck blow a flipping red light northbound yesterday, and I'm having to go cover the county because they're screaming for code 3 cover because this one person had a gun. And I can't stop the truck. It's not just us. It's Portland, Multnomah County, Clackamas County, New York. Pick a city, pick a jurisdiction. And this is something that at some point collectively as the city are going to have to try and address from a staffing standpoint. Because Brandon was referring to last night. He says we can't keep up with the call volume that we have. At their current level, and I don't know anything about the fire department budget, so I'm not even remotely qualified to talk about that. But he's saying that I'm just listening to what he said, we can't keep up with the call volume with the influx of people that we're getting. And I think it's wonderful for the city because we're getting increased revenue, we're getting people, this is a good community, people want to be here. The people that are here are really good. With that, though, has to come the infrastructure to support the additional people. And without that support, you're going to end up with a failure. We are very, very, very fortunate. If you've driven around in Eugene at all, you look at some of these streets, and they're lying two cars, two trailers deep, and they're just living in them. We're really... And in the grand scheme of things, we're awfully fortunate. And we probably have 10 or 15 homeless people that live here. Truly, genuinely homeless people. When somebody breaks into something and we have them on video, we can say, "Oh yeah, that's so-and-so," and we go pick them up. And that's the nicety of having a small department where you've got very competent people that are genuinely dedicated to the community, that actually take time to get out of their cars and visit with people. Get out and talk to these people. Most of these homeless people, I can get out and I'll carry on a conversation with them because they're good for information. If I'm looking for something stolen, they're willing to give that person up if I'm willing to buy them a McDonald's hamburger. I buy out of my own pocket with my own money. I buy people hamburgers and breakfasts and stuff all the time. And so does Officer Serrano. Officer Serrano has developed a really good rapport with the transient community, and they say that kind of tongue-in-cheek because we only have 15 people. And that's, we can count our blessings for that because it could be much worse. And all of these 15 people we know. We took a transient that we had. He was on the corner of 99 at 10th by Dairy Queen. And so I got up, never seen him before. I get up there, he's got a 4-foot dagger, or 4-foot stick with a double-edged dagger. He's got a notch in the end of the stick, the dagger in the notch with a leather strap holding it, and he's flailing that thing around at cars. He's wearing a pirate's cap, maybe you've seen him, but in his pirate cap he had a stiletto, which is a concealed weapon. Oh, he's a convicted felon. And so it took two of us to get him into custody. He was harassing people that were going up to the window at Dairy Queen. But we were able to, without shooting him, without a high degree of force, handcuffs, we were able to get him into custody. But this guy's standing on the corner with a damn stick, ready to stick people and jab people. And he's got it's a 60-inch staff that he had with a knife on the end of it. And the people that were, and we had another guy that was here, we had a huge fight with him. It took three of us to get him into custody. But it was the same thing, and he was going to attack somebody by McDonald's. And these are the anomalies. These are not the ones that we're seeing every day. These are kind of the outliers that somehow make it here. And we've been relatively successful in that they don't come back. Or they may come back once, and then they don't come back a second time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness.
I'm excited that we have the committee. I'm excited that you guys are engaged. This is really, really important. And the department as a whole needs your support. The department as a whole needs the support of the council. And I'm really excited at your level of interest because, Sid, the questions you're asking about the stats, that's valid. Absolutely 110% valid. And I'm glad that you're asking that. And we're more than happy to provide it. We're more than happy to provide it. Because the stats are really telling. And it's people come out and ride, and it's like they say, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening in Junction City. The same day that we had the two people that were arrested for DUII that we had before 4 o'clock, I'm dealing with them. I've got one officer dealing with one. I've got another officer dealing with the other one. We get a report that the complainant is chasing their stolen vehicle northbound on River Road coming into the city. So I get in behind them and I get an occupied stolen vehicle. The guy in that car is a felon. I get him stopped at Gun Runners, so we recovered an occupied stolen vehicle. He was driving at more than 100 miles an hour before I pulled in behind him. And he got stuck at the light. I happened to be at the right place, and I flipped around on him. He didn't blow through the light, which surprised me. Didn't turn on the lights. I was waiting for cover. And then he started hitting about 80, and I thought, well, okay, here we go. And I turned on the lights. Amazingly, he stopped. And got him out of the car. But he easily could have killed somebody if he would have continued to drive the way that he was. And he had nothing to lose. It wasn't his car. He just stole it. He stole it off a lot. I can go on with these incidents for a really long time, and people don't see it.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to get a little glimpse. It's Councilor Washburn, any other comments or questions?
I don't have anything else.
Okay, thank you for bringing those things up. Thanks everybody for being here tonight. That's it. it's daunting to really start thinking about, you know, just the hours and the limitations of staffing that are here in comparison to the task at hand. And
anyway, if I could add one more thing, John, I'm sorry to interrupt you. So I'm talking about we're having to prioritize calls. For everything that we do, we can have 2 to 8 hours of paperwork that has to get done. And so if I arrest somebody on a felony, we lodge them at Lane County Jail. So I drop them off at, say, 3 o'clock in the morning at Lane County Jail. I have to have every single report done by 7:30 in the morning, or they kick that person out the door. So I've got a graveyard person that makes an arrest. Say we have a stabbing. We take this person down, we lodge him in jail. We have to have what's called a probable cause affidavit before we even lodge them at the jail. So the officer has to write that, typically about one page, has to write that before they even go to jail. Then they have to come back and they have to write the report. Every officer involved has to write the report. When that goes in the morning at 7 or 7:30, if that release officer doesn't have it, the DA says, nope, no file, we don't have any information, and they shoot him out the door. So not only do we have to prioritize active calls, going from call to call to call, again, what people don't see is on the back end of this are hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of report writing to actually prosecute the case. So there's so much more to this that to the average person it's really simple, and it's anything but simple. So it's, and I mean, you're in pharmacy, you understand record keeping, pharmaceuticals, you know, you're in record keeping. It just, the amount of time that we spend writing reports is crazy. And we have the computers in the cars. Some of the reports can be written in the cars. When you're looking at a homicide, you can't write it in the car. The car is too cramped. You have to be able to look at your body camera footage on one side of the screen and be writing on the other side of it to make sure you get your facts straight. And it just doesn't work in the car. For small reports, you know, of a stolen boat or something, you can do that in the car. That's real easy. Other than that, it has to be done in the office, because you've got to be able to have a screen large enough to watch that, and you have to be able to write the report, and you have to be able to focus on this and not worry if somebody's going to walk up alongside your car and hold a pistol up to the window and shoot you. There are so many pieces to this that, and I'm excited to talk about it. You wound me up. You know, I'm excited to talk about this stuff because it gives me a chance to educate. It gives me a chance to educate what it is that really is entailed in doing this. Because this isn't a single dimension task. It's a multifaceted task that requires a multiple arsenal of skills. Being able to write, being able to communicate, being able to shoot, being able to physically perform the job, being able to run, being able to drive, understanding the laws. When I get out of the car, I need to have in my head a solid understanding of what are the laws, has this person broken a law? I don't have the time to get on scene and start looking on my phone or in a book. Well, have they really done something? I need to know that. I need to know it on the fly. And that is something that comes only with experience, and it comes only with training. And I think that this is fascinating, and I'm thoroughly enjoying this meeting tonight, because it's giving me an opportunity to maybe give a little bit of insight that there's a lot more here. Just, I know that you've got some affiliation with the fire department. I apologize. I know you've told me, but I don't remember. No.
Then I used to be reserve here years ago.
And I don't know the first thing about firefighting.
Well, yeah, but I used to be a reserve police officer here years ago.
And so you know what I'm talking about. And you know, when I started in 1975 as a cadet, when I started in Junction City, I was seeing behavior and performance of staff and personnel, that which I would have expected to have seen in 1975, not in 2016. And I'm just sitting back looking, and it's like, I can't believe what I'm looking at. And it things have changed, and this world is going to continue to change. Some for the good, some for the worse. Hmm. So I'll shut up. I appreciate you listening to me.
So you started as a cadet when how old did you start as a cadet?
I was 14.
So you've been in law enforcement for 40 years?
46.
So 46, that means you're competent times 9. 5 years per competency level. Yeah, that's a lot to try to train somebody on. Good grief. Well, yeah, I mean, thank you for coming here and talking to us about these things. Thanks for taking some questions, and thanks for giving us some insight. So, yeah, it's a big job. We're tasking our department with a huge job, and it's enlightening to get a little more perspective on what that really entails. So thank you. And Councilor Wells and Councilor Washburn, thanks for being here tonight. I'm going to adjourn this meeting now. I think everybody finished? Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Okay, so let's adjourn the meeting, 7:57. Good night, everybody.